You're listening to the All Things Good Sports Podcast, a product of All Things Good Company.
Hey, welcome to the All Things Good Sports Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Pulver, and I'm here with my guest host today, Zeebo Jean-McClure, our West Coast correspondent. How's it going, Z?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Awesome. Thanks for coming back, man.
No, thank you for the invite. It's a pleasure being back on. It was really fun last time when I was on. Ready to have some good discussion, good topics, so ready to get a show on the road.
Yeah, and Zeebo, for the listeners, he just moved recently to right across the street from Staples Center, so we'll get some good insight to what's going on in Lakers culture. Right. There he is. He's all the way now. So, yeah, no, we'll get some good insight from him in a little bit. We've been away for a little while, you know, since last time we talked. Sports had been out. There was leagues and collective bargaining agreements were up in the air, and we didn't know what was really going to happen. And now we got sports, and there's all kinds of stuff. There's more sports than there's ever been before in my lifetime going on right now. So it's very exciting, man. I guess we'll start with the NFL. So we're sitting here. By the way, right now it is Friday night, and the Lakers and Nuggets haven't started yet. So we might look stupid when we talk about them, but just keep that in mind. So Friday night, we've got 1 week in the NFL and the first game of week two going so far. And I guess the first thing I want to talk about is the biggest story of the offseason is Tom Brady and Gronk and the big move to Tampa Bay. And you start out in week one, and it didn't look all that great. Albeit they were going against a good team. But what did you see out of Tampa Bay and Tom overall, Z, in the first week?
Yeah. So when Tom went to the Buccaneers and has Bruce Arians as a coach, my biggest, not concern, but biggest question was, Bruce Arians is a coach that likes to throw the ball down the field, right? And we all know how great of a quarterback Tom Brady is, right? He's the GOAT. He's accomplished everything. He's the best quarterback that we've ever seen so far, right? Mm-hmm. With that aside, he is getting a lot older. So his arm strength isn't where it used to be. So my biggest question going into this game was, or into the season was, can Tom Brady throw the ball 40 yards down the field and get it to Mike Evans, right? Because you have New England, you have a lot of these players like Julian Edelman, Gronk, that runs a slant route.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, the cross routes and the slant routes and the pocket passes, and that's what he lived on the last year.
Exactly. A lot of rhythm throwing, which is great. You know, he dissects defenses, and he does a great job with it. I had a chance to just watch the game a little bit, and I don't think necessarily Tom Brady played bad, right? Because it is only week one. No one's had preseason yet so far. And it's not like Tom Brady went out there and didn't perform, right? Because he went out there, he made the touchdowns, he made the drives. There was a few turnovers here and there. And, you know, as football is, it's a team sport. So when you win or lose, it's not always on the quarterback or, you know, whoever else it is. It's always a team effort. So
definitely.
Week one, I saw a lot of promising things that Tom Brady did with the Buccaneers, and they can only improve upon that as well. So, you know, am I worried? No, not at all. Like, they'll be fine. They're in a weaker division. Playing the Saints is never easy when you have guys like Breeze, Kamara, Michael Thomas. All these guys have been playing together for the past few years. And, you know, Brady is going into a new situation with a new coach, new system, new players. So give this man a little bit of time to really gel. But I just want to say the biggest thing for me, and it's really interesting to hear, to see what the narrative is going to be going into like maybe week eight, you know, later on. Mm-hmm. Because if hypothetically the Patriots start winning, right, and the Buccaneers drop a few games, I feel like the narrative is going to be, is Belichick the reason Tom Brady succeeded or vice versa, right? Because that's essentially what this season is basically like letting me know.
This is what we all wanted to see, and this is our first opportunity to see him without each other.
So I think it's, you know, let's wait and see what happens. Week one, it was a phenomenal game, but playing the Saints is pretty tough.
Yeah. So I mean, it's tough because we don't know. We didn't really know for sure how successful this team would be. We had a rough idea. They went 8-8 last year, and Jameis Winston, he turned the ball over a lot. He had 30 interceptions. But on the other hand, he had 5,100 passing yards. So the man just had a lot of everything. He was chucking the ball. The thing that they wanted from Tom Brady was discipline and taking care of the ball, and that's not what they had out of Jameis. So that's what they wanted. I think Tom can gather himself and get that the rest of the season. But they are in a tough division. They have New Orleans in that division. Yeah, and I do think that the Saints will probably take the division. But honestly, you get in the playoffs, I think that this team can go 10-6 or 11-5 or somewhere in that range of a borderline playoff team or the wild card team. And I think that if you get him in the playoffs with all those weapons, I think anything is up for grabs. You know, we've seen wild card teams win the Super Bowl before. So I think it's about the long game with them. I think they want Tom to be – they got to get to the playoffs first. Don't get me wrong. They haven't proven anything yet. But they want him to be healthy in December, in January, in February. So I do expect them to be in play for playoff position down the line. And I think that once they get in the playoffs, all bets are off. You got Tom Brady, and I don't care what you've done all season. I think you still got a chance.
I think what's great about the NFL and the formatting, and the reason why I love it so much, is because unlike the NBA, you have a 7-game series, right? So for the most part, the best team always wins. But in the NFL, it's a 1-game elimination. It doesn't matter, you know, if, you know, you could be playing the Browns, right? And they could have a hot streak and just win it all, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing I do love about NFL is it's a single elimination games, and every play matters, unlike a lot of different sports where you have a multiple game. So a mistake is not as costly. So, yeah, let's wait and see exactly what happens. But I'm excited to see what this NFL season has to bring. And let's just be real, like 2020 has been a crazy year. Could any of us imagine Tom Brady not being in like a New England jersey or blue and white jersey? Like that is crazy to me that he's in a red color, right? As basic as that is, Tom Brady is in a Buccaneers jersey.
It was weird. It was weird to see, man, honestly. And but yeah, speaking of the Patriots, you brought up Belichick. It was very interesting to watch Cam Newton as the quarterback of the Patriots, just because of how different of a quarterback he is. And especially this last week, he was really a ground attack quarterback. He had 75 rushing yards and 15 rushing attempts and got in the end zone a couple of times. And I think he had one rushing touchdown, but man, that he looked really good. They ran a real, real old school type of slow plodding up the field rushing game offense. But it was interesting to watch them with the option. And it'll be interesting to see. I think that if they run this offense, every decision goes through Cam Newton. They'll really ride. They'll go as far as he'll take them. And it'll be interesting to see their running back core with Sony Michel and James White and those guys running that type of offense. I think it's interesting because they had such a good defense last year. We didn't really know what to expect because they had like 11 players opt out of the season because of coronavirus, and most of them were defense. So, but the defense looked pretty good week one. I know they had a lot of good backup personnel. So I think that they look a lot more promising than people thought to be competitive. And I think that's all that you can ask as a Patriots fan after losing Tom Brady. What did you see out of them?
I wasn't sure where I stand on the Patriots, right? Because I'm not sure if, like, I'll just preface by saying I'm not a Patriots fan, but I lived in New England for a long time, so I understand the Patriots organization and everything else. Now, as a Patriots fan yourself, I just want to ask you a question first. Do you think Cam Newton is the answer for the quarterback position for the next few years, or is he a gap stop right now heading into the next year?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about Bill Belichick is you've got Cam on like $1 million minimum contract right now, and I think that's as far as he sees in the future. He sees this guy is great for that contract, and, you know, if Cam happens to blow up this year, first of all, that's good news because then he would be doing really well for the Patriots. But I don't see Bill wanting to give him $15, $20 million. That's just the way he's always operated, and – we kind of thought he would make Tom Brady the exception to that rule. but he didn't this time around. He was willing to let him walk and not up the price tag for him. So I think it depends on what you see. I think it's probably unlikely that we're going to see him as the quarterback going forward in the future, just because if he doesn't play that well, then they won't really want to bring him back. They'll go with a younger option. But if he does play that well, he'll probably be earning more money than the Patriots want to play him. So I'm going to enjoy this year. I'm going to get behind Cam and watch what this totally different offense does. I mean, you know, Tom Brady staple in town, sitting down watching him old pocket passer, and then you got Cam Newton running the option, man. I'm along for the ride, man. And, you know, honestly, I'm just glad to have NFL football going on, and I'm just very excited to be watching this. It's something to look forward to three nights a week now. Do you see where I'm coming from? That is, I don't think Bill wants to pay him.
I agree. And I think it shows that Bill Belichick gave him a 1-year deal instead of like a 2-year deal, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think Cam is the answer for the Patriots in the future, because I think they want to get a younger guy in, a guy that Belichick can groom and make his own QB. It's kind of like the Jimmy Garoppolo. I felt like, when Jimmy Garoppolo was on his contract year, I think that was a year that Belichick wanted to get rid of Brady and have Jimmy G step in as his younger person, that not only could play for the next 4 years, but he could play for the next 10 years, right? And so I think Robert Kraft was the one to stop Brady from not starting. And so I think Robert Kraft did all he could. But on the other end, can you really blame Belichick for going that route? Because he's doing what's best for the team, right? And I think a lot of times, you have a fan's perspective and you have a team's perspective, right? Those are two different perspectives that you're going to be coming from. From the fan perspective, obviously a guy like Brady, done a lot, for this organization, a legend, you don't want to see him leave. But also on the same end, Belichick needs to look at his team for the next 10 years and not for the next 2 years, right?
Yeah.
And so I think, in my opinion, like, there's always been the great debate of, is Brady better? Is Belichick better, right? I can safely say they're both great in their own ways, right? So let's not compare and contrast in that sense, because one is a coach and one is a player, right? But in my opinion, which one's more valuable? I would put more value into Belichick because he coaches the team, he helps draft the team, he's more involved with the overall team structure. So when it came down to time to pick between Brady or Belichick, of course it's Belichick. So I'm interested to see what Belichick can do with this team, because, when you talk about Belichick, when you talk about Brady, you can't not talk about one or the other, right? And now we have the opportunity to see the separation and what each person can do. So I'm interested to see what this NFL season has to offer, as it will be a storyline that we'll definitely follow throughout the year, throughout this year, I mean. So,
And it's definitely interesting because we've seen Bill adjust the game plan based on personnel a little bit, like tweak it, right, based on who he has on his team. But we've never seen him totally revamp their whole offensive scheme. This is one thing that's really interesting to me, because he's had Tom Brady almost forever, right? And then before he had Drew Bledsoe, who was at the time of Tom Brady's beginning of his career somewhat similar in style of play. And the last time we've really seen something totally different from him and innovative for Belichick was when he was on the Giants coming up with those crazy defensive schemes. So it'll be really cool to watch him. You're right. As a fan perspective, it's tough because, like, oh, match whatever Brady wants. I don't want to see him in another jersey, right? But at the same time, I saw it's tough because I went through, as a Lakers fan, I went through the Kobe Bryant end of his years. And I am really glad, even looking back at it, that they gave Kobe some money and we got to watch him finish his career and not go off and be a Dallas Maverick for 2 years, But at the same time, that really handicapped them for the next 3 or 4 years after that. So it's a sacrifice. Are you willing to take it? Are you not? I don't know. But on the other hand, I've heard that that's one of the reasons why LeBron wanted to go to the Lakers, because he knows they take care of their stars as they're aging, versus some organizations like the Celtics that have traded away Isaiah Thomas after he played in the playoffs, after the death of his sister and all that stuff, played through injury and boom, you're gone. They've kind of been known to do that. And I worry a little bit about Belichick earning that reputation of players just thinking that they're being treated as pawns in a scheme and not really taken care of. That's the only thing I worry about with Belichick's style. But in the end, you know, a lot of players still keep coming because they know that he's a genius with football and they know that he wins. And if they go to a winning team, then they can get paid at another time. So you mentioned that you're not a Patriots fan. You know, you've grown up as an Eagles fan. What do you think of them this week playing the Rams? What do you see going on there?
Oh, man. I watched week one when they played against the Washington no-names, right? And
the football team.
I mean, whatever they are, Washington, whatever they are, you know? Yeah. My thing is, how do we lose against a team that doesn't have a freaking name? Like, I was really mad. A lot of problems that I saw. Not all of it on Carson Wentz, but the decision-making by Carson Wentz really, it didn't make me feel confident, right? And to paint you guys a picture, essentially what happened was we have one of the best offensive lines in the league, but the other caveat to that was we get injured on a consistent basis. So our left tackle, our right guard, our left guard all got injured, right? And our right tackle, which is an all-pro for the past 3 years, didn't play. So we have two rookies that started, and one guy that played rugby 3 years ago and never played football, and is training to become a right tackle, right? So how can you have someone in there playing, starting against a guy like Chase Young, that's a first-round draft pick, a beast on the line? And biggest concern for me is Carson Wentz's decision to hold the ball when you know your offensive line is really weak, right?
He's getting sacked a lot, and, you know, at this point, he's not a new quarterback. You know, these are the instincts that you should know.
Exactly. He's been around the block a few times. And as an Eagles fan, right, as an Eagles community, we're not the most patient, right?
No.
If we see something we don't like, we're a week-to-week fan, right?
And yeah, they'll start a GoFundMe to get a new kicker or petition online.
We started a GoFundMe page to help get Carson benched and put in Jalen Hurts after week one, right?
Oh, so my God. I didn't even hear about that. I just know what they've done in the past.
That's how reactionary we are as fans. And we're passionate, right? We're a passionate bunch. So I don't blame us for being, you know, like this sometimes. But on the other hand, Carson, we need you to play a little better. The Rams, they look good playing against the Cowboys last week, right? And, you know, like, what makes me feel good was that Giants lost and the Cowboys lost, right? So if we can come into next week, win the next game, I think we can put that behind us, right?
Because it's almost like a clean slate after week one.
Exactly. Well, let's play week two. I don't feel so confident going in, but I feel confident in my guys where we can go in and play well. We have our right tackle back. We have Miles Sanders back. We have some of our players back. So that is going to help us in the long run. But one thing to look out for, decision-making by Carson Wentz, and let's not try to win every play, right? Pick and choose the plays that we want to win and the type of plays that we want to throw down the field. Let's not hold the ball for 5 seconds every time around. That's just my
Carson, my watch out for Aaron Donald, man. That train's going to be coming.
We will not have a lot of time in the pocket. So throw the ball quick and make them, like, let's not have our offense line ruin the game and have their defensive end kill us, right? If they're going to beat us straight up, not by dumb decision, by making interceptions, because the worst thing you can do, like we talked about Jameis Winston, it doesn't matter if you throw 30 touchdowns. If you throw 30 interceptions on top of that, you're giving the defense 30 more times to go down and score. So, great, you throw 30 touchdowns. But at the same time, you're giving away 30 times to the other opponent to score as well. So, you know, we have to find that balance in regards to not turning the ball over, playing solid defense, and just making the right decisions.
Definitely. We'll be covering football all year. It's a fun ride to take, and we're excited for it. Another thing that comes this time of year is fantasy football. And, last weekend was unreal. I usually keep myself busy on the weekends. You know, I sit down or I do chores or whatever. And I sat down for like 4 straight hours and I just watched football and I had my phone out. I'm like, all right, who's playing right now, who's scoring. And, you know, you get that feeling every year. And it just felt normal for a day, man. Just for me, honestly, it was cool to have that feeling back. I don't know how it felt for you.
I mean, I think all of us right now with the coronavirus, we just want some type of like normality, right? Like we want things to be normal, or at least we want to feel as normal as possible. And when this whole coronavirus first started, you know, we didn't have sports. We didn't have an outlet where we can put a lot of our energy in. So as a result, a lot of us just follow the news every day. And like, great, you know, we need to follow the news and understand what's happening. But
we can go down a rabbit hole. You can go down a rabbit hole and you can, it's tough to unplug from all the problems that you have during the workday. If you go watch the news and hear about all the other problems that is going on in the world, and then you go back to your problems in your workday and you go back to the problems. It's an ongoing cycle. And I mean, we've had some sports, but nothing catches the attention of America the way the football does.
Football and sports, a lot of outlets. And I'm glad, you know, we're doing this podcast as well, as we want to talk about things that are positive in this world, right? Because, you know, with news and everything else, like you look over here, you look over there, everything's negative, right? Like this is the whole world's blowing up. But, you know, in reality, we can make through, you know, we can make it through it. And, you know, we'll be better, you know, after the end of it. And, you know, it's great that the sport is back so we can have things to talk about, things that we can be passionate about. That's not about the world ending, but about things that, you know, doesn't really matter at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah.
It matters because, you know, we are fans, and we want to be passionate about something. And so I'm glad we, you know, sports is back. And, you know, I'm glad I'm on this podcast where, you know, we can reach a bunch of people and hopefully have more discussions, not only about sports, but hopefully about things that we could be doing better as a society going forward.
Sure. And I, you know, we have, you know, as a culture, and I think more than ever, we've been having big conversations and stuff. And I think that's good. That's great. It's important for growth. But at a time, especially where so many people still around the country are more often than not inside of their house by themselves, we got to have something that's an outlet that you can go and you can get passionate and you can have an argument about whether or not they should have thrown it on third down and in something so frivolous. And who am I going to start this week at wide receiver and fantasy and stuff that does not matter at all in the grand scheme of things, but it matters because it brings you joy and it unplugs you for a second, man. So that's what's great to have back. So moving on, we'll go to the NFL playoffs, man. We're down to four teams. First of all, in the Eastern Conference, the Heat are up 2-0 as we're recording right now. Do you think that they're going to take it all the way to the finals, through this series?
I'll just first by saying Celtics blew game one. Celtics played better in game one, but they blew it. Right. And so it's interesting to see in these playoffs because, you know, they're in a bubble. The circumstances are so much different. I feel like, do you feel like if the NBA playoffs would have happened normally versus what is happening now, do you think the same results would have happened? Because I'm going to switch it off, but just a little bit. Do we think the Clippers would have lost if everything just went normal and it went straight into playoffs, no coronavirus, no breaks in between? Do you think the Clippers would have possibly made it into the conference finals at least?
I think as a result of this, I think that it's so hard to win on the road in the playoffs, especially when you got the fans. And that being the case, I don't think that any team, it's so hard to come back from 3-1 when you're doing those games going on the road. Mm-hmm. So I think if the Clippers had some actual home court advantage, if they had 4 out of 7 games at home rather than 7 games at a neutral location with no pressure of crowd noise and all that stuff, I think they probably wouldn't have won the series. And mm-hmm. I'm not trying to take anything away from the Nuggets because I've been loving that ride and they've been an awesome team to watch. But you're right. There's no home court advantage right now. And that's a huge thing about working hard through the whole season, get the number one and the number two seed. Same thing with the Bucks, maybe that's a different situation there if they actually have opened the series with 2 games at home in Milwaukee. So you work all year, you get that top seed, and then you get the lower seed. But as far as in the series, it's even. It's a draw. It's a neutral location.
I 100% agree. And I think if the Celtics would have been at home at game one with the crowd, I don't think they would have not necessarily blown it, but kind of blown it because they were up by a little bit, right? So I think in regards to that series, the Heat is up 2-0. Now, looking at things right now, Celtics need to treat game three as game seven, right? Because if you're going down 3-0, it's over. It's over. You're not beating the Miami Heat.
Yeah.
What I do love about Miami and the way they play is I'm a Spurs fan at the end of the day, right? I'm a Lakers fan as well because I live in LA now. I live two blocks away from Staples Center. But what I do see in the Heat is that they play a very well team offense where it's not Jimmy Butler just takes over the entire time. It's a bunch of guys chipping in. It's Tyler Hero making shots. It's Duncan Robinson making shots. It's Bam Adebayo doing the pick and roll.
And nobody ever talks about Goran Dragic, and he's actually the leading scorer. But yeah, you're right. It's a balanced attack. Yeah.
How do you stop that team when you have so many firepower where they can score in so many different ways? And before this playoff series started, I say Goran Dragic is one of the most underrated players in this league because what can't this man do? Not do. Like, he can score. He can shoot from the three. He can pass the ball. He's a willing passer at the end of the day. That's the biggest thing.
As far as I can tell from a distance, he has no ego. He has no, I need the ball in the fourth quarter. Get out of my way. He can hit the shot, but, you know, he's willing to let somebody else be, you know, the man down the line, but he's there whenever you need him. And that's one thing about Jimmy is that he has been so clutch hitting those shots. It's been unbelievable. But like you said, there's a difference between hitting those clutch shots in the rhythm of the offense and every once in a while taking over a possession versus what you see out of guys like James Harden and Russell Westbrook, which down the line late in the playoffs, the offense tends to be, all right, four out, I'm at the top of the key, let me dribble for 20 seconds and I'm gonna chuck it up. You don't see that out of the Heat. And to be honest, to be totally fair, you don't see that out of the Celtics either. And they've got the same type of thing. Kemba has been hitting a lot of huge shots. Jaylen Brown's been hitting big shots. Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, been unbelievable. But, man, the biggest thing for me, the Celtics, man, they have taken their fans for a ride. They have all these overtime games and these late, close fourth quarter games that just go the other way. They've had so many games. That last series, they should have won that last series in five games, but it went down to the very end of the series because they kept losing it at the end. And then game one was the same story. They got an overtime. They got a lead in overtime, and it looked like they were going to run away with it. Next thing you know, they're down 0-1. They got a 19-point lead last game. Next thing you know, they're down 0-2, and they're scrambling. And a lot of people don't think about it this way because people get down 2-0 a lot and get back and make it competitive. But down 0-2, you got to win 4 out of 5 to win the series. That's a lot of pressure. So, like you said, you got to get – Game seven, right now. Foot on the pedal.
What is the Celtics missing? Because if you look at them on paper, they're as equally talented, if not better, than Miami on paper, right? On paper and playing together are two different things, right? So I always felt like the Celtics were missing that one piece, right? I always felt like if they would have gotten a good big man, or even Al Horford would have stayed, where they could have a big man that could really play well for them. Like, I love – what's his name? Daniel Tice, right?
Yeah.
I love him. But where he struggles, defensively, he's great in the paint. But where he struggles is that pick and roll, the high pick and roll, where he can't go and guard, right? And that's just the modern NBA today where it's like
– Yeah. You saw that in the last series of the Lakers. The last couple of games, you didn't see Dwight Howard or JaVale McGee basically pay at all.
No.
Because they couldn't get on the switch. Yeah.
No, and look at what Jamal Murray and Jokic did. That pick and roll between two of them ruined anything the Clippers had. It don't matter if you put Kawhi Leonard there. It don't matter if you had PG, 13, Pandemic 13, whatever you want to call him these days, right? Like, it don't matter. But, like, that pick and roll. So, I'm not sure what the Celtics need. It seems like they don't have the guy, right? A guy that can lead the unit where, like, you have a guy like a Jimmy Butler that's intense, that's willing to play hard defense day night in and night out, right? So we'll see. Let's not count the Celtics out, but they have to treat the next game as game seven.
And what's crazy is they win last game. We're not saying, oh, what's wrong with the Celtics? What's wrong with their culture? Because, I mean, they have so many good pieces, and Kemba has hit so many of those step-back shots, and Jason Tatum has been unbelievable. But then you've got the story coming out, the locker room after the game. I think it was Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown had to get separated in the locker room. And on one hand, it's good to have that passion about losing. You want to feel it. You want that to hurt, especially in the playoffs. But that doesn't speak very well to their chemistry, I guess. So it'll be interesting to see. I do think that they will, backs against the wall, I think they're going to win next game. Then it's 2-1. It's a much closer series at that point.
They're going to win the series.
I thought that they were before. I think they'll make it six. They'll make it seven. And sorry to all the Celtics fans I know. I got a lot of friends that are Celtics fans. It's tough to come back from 2-0 like this when you won't have home court advantage. So I think they're going to fight back in. And they might, you know, they're going to make it a series, I think. But the Heat, they're relentless right now.
Relentless. Defensively, how well they're playing as a unit. Like, I hope the Celtics get back because I want to see a good series. I don't want to see the Heat win in five.
Nobody wants to see that. Yeah.
I want to see another game seven where, you know, status and legendary, you know, things are on the line. So I want to see all that. So let's root for a game seven, but I hope the Celtics come back and play well. But it seems like they're missing that extra intensity. So let's see where they can come out with game three at. And if we see another, if they're up by 15 in the third, they let, you know, they don't play as hard and the Heat come back in, then it's just, then we will know something is wrong. But yeah, let's wait until game three and see what happens.
Yeah, so moving on to the Lakers and Nuggets. We're recording this before seeing them play game one. So forgive us for being totally wrong about this first game. But first of all, I just wanted to get your perspective as someone, like you said, you live a couple blocks from Staples Center. Do you feel the culture at all there right now? I mean, normally these games, everybody be exiting the building right there. You got all the people selling clothes in the street and all that stuff. I mean, is that going on right now? Is there some of that culture?
Of course, of course. And, you know, L.A. is, you know, if you haven't been to L.A., you know, people like to think like, oh, maybe it's Clippers that are, you know, are maybe starting to take over L.A. No, 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 no. Let's just get this real. Lakers are the number one team in L.A. There's no ifs, ands, and buts. It don't matter if the Clippers win two championships. No one gives a crap about the Clippers, right? And, like, it just goes to show that they lost in game two and everyone's roasting them, making fun of them. I actually was walking down the street the other day, right? Right around Staples Center. I was doing my morning exercise. I walked by this guy. And, you know, obviously with Corona and everything else, we want to be socially distant. So people aren't, you know, very talkative these days because, you know, because of the current situation. And I had 2 to 3 people come up to me, not really come up to me, but talk to me and be like, yeah, you see the Lakers win? You know, all these different energy, like all my friends here are Lakers fans. It's a really passionate fan base. And like, to be fair, like you look at a guy like Alex Caruso. If you play on the Milwaukee Bucks, who is Alex Caruso?
Yeah, exactly. He's Matthew Dellavedova, right?
If that, you know, yeah, like no one would know. If, for example, who's a worse guy? Who's like a guy that's like no one would know? If you were to play it on the Celtics, not the Celtics. If you were to play it on the Lakers, he'll be a, you know, household name. Like Swaggy P was a household name when Lakers were winning 13 games. You know, a season.
Sure. So, and I'll even go as far as Kuzma. I love Kuzma, but if he's on the Atlanta Hawks, then nobody gives a crap about Kuzma. He'd be scoring 19 points a game and he'd be a borderline all-star contender, but he would not be known. He would not be talked about on ESPN. So, no, it is the way it is. It's the culture, and they are such a huge part of the NBA fan base. So, no, I just wanted to get your perspective from being out there because I hadn't known. I haven't been out there, but I know it is – the whole city gets behind them, and they've been so hungry for winning for such a long time. And now they're here in the Western Conference Finals and everybody's playing in Orlando. So that's interesting to hear. But I mean, going into game one, I guess, what do you see for the series overall? Do you see the Lakers taking this? Or, I mean, do you see a long series? What do you see?
So I'm not going to call out which game they're going to win by, but I'll say they'll win, right?
Yeah.
If it's game five, game six, game seven, whatever, Lakers are going to take it, right? But the biggest matchup is obviously on the Nuggets side, Jamal Murray and Jokic, right? Now, I have never seen – I wouldn't say I've never seen, but I haven't seen in a while where a guy like Jokic can score 12 points a game and be the most dominant player in that game where he was unstoppable. How do you score 12 points and make 13 assists and, like, 20 rebounds?
Yeah,
like
22 rebounds. Crazy.
But his assist on the other end was – it's brilliant, right? It's brilliant what he does. So that's going to be the biggest thing is can the Lakers contain Jamal Murray? Because what the Clippers did was towards the end, they doubled Jamal Murray, right? Once you double, they're going to do the kick and roll and kick it to Jokic. And Jokic has the option to shoot, drive, and dish to, you know, either the person over to the right or the left, because someone is not manning up because they had to double team Jamal Murray.
Yeah, so the defense is rotating. And Jokic has the ability to see over everybody because he's tall, but he's also got the vision too.
Exactly. So I think that the biggest matchup is how will Anthony Davis disrupt Jokic. And I think Davis will do a better job because Zubac is not really the best center in the league. And like Montrez is great in his own sense, but he's only like 6'8 or something.
Yeah.
We have a guy like a Jokic at 7 foot that can just put the ball up here and just look over. And there's nothing Montrez can do, right? Yeah. Now, AD is kind of like a point guard that's a 7 footer in a sense. So he can shuffle his feet very well. And let's not get it twisted. Like, we haven't seen LeBron play defense in the regular season for the past, like, 2 years, right? Mm. But we all know, once he starts playing D, he is the best defensive player in the league. Once he starts trying to play defense, he's the best defensive player in the league. You saw that in the last series of what happened, how many chase-down blocks. When's the last time we saw that many chase-down blocks in the game by LeBron? I haven't.
Yeah, he had, like, 4 in 1 quarter.
The man is dominant. Like, I don't care what anybody else says. He can score. LeBron as a shooter right now is obviously not Steph Curry on that level, but the man can make open threes. Like, you can't leave him open. And props to LeBron for playing that point guard position and, you know, being able to facilitate the ball. And, like, yeah, people give crap to LeBron when he scores 12 points sometimes, but he's also the freaking point guard of the team. So if this team is going, why would he stop and drop 30 points where you can feed guys like Kuzma that is knocking down the shot, KCP that's knocking down the shot? So I think this series would be a great series, but I think the matchup between Denver and Laker are a mismatch because you have the two best players. LeBron and AD are better players than Jokic and Jamal Murray, right?
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that's what's going to be interesting because, like, you're talking about with LeBron is like I thought the first game of each of the last two series he wasn't totally engaged. I mean, he was there. He was trying, but he wasn't – next level LeBron, and that first game got him in that. He's like, oh my god, I'm not gonna lose to these guys. Like, I am beast mode LeBron now. And I think he's got to come out of that right out of the gate. And you're right, he has to distribute, he has to have that role. But if your team starts to fall behind, step it up, you LeBron. You know, you can go get like 4 buckets in a row, and your team's back in the game. And I think he's absolutely capable of that. He's just it's gotta be when he wants to turn it on, and when he decides to do it, nobody can stop him. But, yeah, what will be interesting for me in the series is Jamal Murray has been going off, absolutely off. And Rondo last series was able to contain and jump the passing lanes and get some steals. But I think we all know he's been playing really well in the playoffs, but he's not the defender that he used to be. So, you know, like you said, they're going to have to be bringing a second defender on him. So it'll be interesting to see if they have to start taking him out and playing Caruso with Caldwell Pope and Caruso – with Danny Green and totally take Rondo out of the lineup because he is not their best defender. You'd rather have Danny Green, KCP, Alex Caruso. They're all better defenders. And then that's just more pressure on LeBron to create the offense. So that's one thing I'll be watching. And another thing is, like we talked about already, Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, they were huge all season. They were gone last series to match up with that 6'8" Rockets team. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Jokic because Jokic is an absolute beast of a man. He's a huge human being, so you could use that size. But on the other end of the court, when Jokic is playing defense, you got to get him out of the paint. And those guys don't draw him out the way that Davis at the 5 does. So those are the two things I'll be watching at the start of the series is, can they keep Rondo in the lineup? And do those other big guys stay in, or do they have to go small the whole series? So it'll be interesting to see.
I think I was a doubter of Rondo when he came back from the injury. I'm like, why do we have this guy on? Like, he can't really shoot threes. And sometimes when he makes a three, you're like, dude, like, I don't want you to make a three because you're going to take three more right after, right? I don't want you to take threes. I will say, Rondo in the second unit, at least for the last series, right? Like, he hasn't done it in a long enough this season where I'd be like, okay, this is what Rondo is, right? Now, Rondo coming in as a secondary guy in the backup is really good because what Rondo does offer is playmaking, running an offense, and making the right read. Now, when LeBron is out, who on the Lakers can make those decisions?
Yeah, they need him when LeBron's off the floor. They need to stagger those minutes. Because Caldwell Pope, I like Caruso a lot, and he can handle the ball and he can dish, but he's not going to penetrate and draw the defense the way that Rondo does when he's driving to the rim, and he's not going to sit back and see all the cuts and make all those passes the way that Rondo does. So he's very important on their offense. He makes them a lot better. I'm just wondering about the other side, but maybe they can stagger his minutes with LeBron off the court and only half the time that Rondo's in, he's guarding Murray. That's the only thing that I worry about is on his defense. That's the only thing. And I know he's locked in. He's done pretty well. But, dude, Murray's been going off that first series, 35 a game, and then last he just dropped 40 last game. So it's going to be tough to contain.
I think with Murray, okay, with Murray, I think the player that needs to play the best is Danny Green, because Danny Green is going to be matched up on Jamal Murray to start the game, because LeBron's not going to be on Jamal. Let's just be real. LeBron's not going to be on Jamal Murray when – you know, the series first starts, right? It's going to be KCP and Danny Green. And now when Rondo comes in, it's usually going to – he's probably going to guard – I don't think he'll guard – what do you call it? Jamal Murray. He might have to a few times. But
he'll probably guard the shooting guard. Yeah, you're right.
Exactly. So we'll see how that matchup comes down, because at the end of the day, we're seeing how each team is willing to match up. And now talking about the Rockets series, like – the Lakers aren't built for small ball. Like, we just fucking bullshitted that, right? We're like, okay, Dwight and JaVale, you're not going to play. We're going to get – who's this other dude that just came in and just balled out and just, like, we're playing the small lineup. Now, you're telling me that the Lakers were playing small ball with the Rockets that designed their whole entire team on small ball, and they lost 4-1? Like, come on. Like, that's what gives me a lot of confidence in our squad that we can adjust the different things and play accordingly. So that gave me a lot of confidence that we can play small ball with the Rockets and we shit on them.
They beat the Rockets so hard that Mike D'Antoni gave up. Quit on the plane ride home, man. So that's a beating when you do that.
Beating and a half. So I'm very confident in the Lakers going forward, and that, you know, the Nuggets have had a great run. I love Jamal Murray. I love Jokic. I love what the team does. But at the same time, at the end of the day, they're running into a juggernaut in LeBron and AD. And so I think, you know, I can't predict the game that it's going to end, but it's going to be Lakers in whatever series.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I hope, you know, I'm a Lakers fan, but I want to see a good series too, because those are the ones you remember. So I'm excited to see what this Nuggets team can do, because they've been – a lot of fun to watch all year, but obviously the Lakers, if they're playing right, they're the favorites. So I see them going forward, and I see them probably playing the Heat, but who knows what could happen. You know, Nuggets have come back 3-1 twice. You can't take the foot off the gas pedal with those guys. So
exactly. So I'm hoping for Celtics versus Lakers, because it's a legendary matchup. Everyone's going to talk about it for the next, you know, 10 years, 20
That'd be
years.
Good for the league. That's for sure.
Great for the league. But at the same time, if the Heat win, you know, the narrative would be LeBron's playing his old team in Miami. So either way, whoever wins from the East will have a great series against Lakers. You know, Nuggets, you've done well. You've done your part. Come back next year with a little bit stronger, but it's going to be Lakers in the series.
Got you. So run a little short on time, but we just want to touch on a couple of quick topics. So Zhang, you've been keeping track of soccer international way more than me. Give us a quick update. Major stories going on there.
Yeah. So I've recently just gotten to, you know, following soccer and watching the Premier League, the Bundesliga, which is the German league. And there's also the Italian league. And there's also the French league. So, you know, there's a bunch of leagues that you can pay attention to, but for me, I've been following the Premier League, which is the league in England, right?
And so I guess I would say I'm probably reaching a lot of people that are Americans and not as into international soccer in the Premier League and whatnot as much as you are and as much as most people are around the world, let's be honest. So if you're talking to a novice soccer fan, what do you recommend they go watch? Like, is it the Premier League? I think that's what you've said, is the Premier League, right?
Yeah, so just a quick general overview, you know, for people that, you know, are trying to get into soccer or trying to understand the rules, because it's sometimes it's tough to understand how soccer is laid out, because American sports is laid out a lot different than European sports, right? And so a lot of times I think a lot of Americans have a hard time understanding the rules and how things are done. So if I was to recommend a thing for everyone to watch, I would recommend watching Champions League, right? So in soccer, there's a lot of tournaments that happen, right? And so Champions League is a league with the top four teams from each country, from each league, right? So the Premier League, the top four teams will get into a tournament, and the top four teams in Italy, Germany, So all these teams will play together and they will play for a prize. Now in Champions League, just to give you guys a quick heads up, is that there are knockout stages, right? Just like when you go watch a World Cup, there's knockout stages. So everything before the final, are two game, they're playing two games. So for example, if, you know, Chelsea was playing, let's say like Arsenal, right? In the Champions League, they would play two games to settle the final score, which is kind of different than American sports because we usually do seven games or one game, right? That's that format. But in Champions League, they do a two-game format, and there's a thing called home goals and away goals, right? Which is something that's very weird to me. But for example, you know, if Chelsea scored on Arsenal at home, a home goal is not going to be worth as much as the away goal. So an away goal is technically worth 1.5 versus a home goal that's worth one, right? So things to take into consideration, because there's a bunch of like that can happen because of this rule. So I would recommend going watching Champions League, as it's the best. It's the best tournament where the best players faces the best teams. And you know, I just want to say congratulations to Bayern Munich for winning. They had an awesome team. They played phenomenal. And they're in the German league, of course, but it's a phenomenal, but I mostly follow the Premier League. And if you, I wake up sometimes 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, as a person that grew up in the US, I watched football when I was like six. So, you know, I watched basketball when I was six. So transitioning and watching more soccer has been really great for me, because it's actually opened my eyes how like the world works on with sports, and how other people are so passionate about one sport. Because I love how people are so passionate about basketball, football, like yourself, Jeff. But I also want to be in a different culture where they're as passionate about a different sport. So if you guys have a chance to check it out, please check out Champions League. And then, you know, if you want to, you know, pick your favorite team, you know, pick it and just follow it. I swear to you guys will really enjoy it. If you have any questions about transfers and how trade is done, let me know. I would love to, you know, explain a little bit more of that so everyone knows the rules of the game, because if you don't know the rules to the game, you can't really enjoy it. And like, yeah, we can't really say too much about, you know, our sports, because like in the NFL, what's a catch and not a catch, right? You and I would know because we watched football for so long, but for a person that haven't watched the sport for so long, they wouldn't understand. They'd be like, what the f*** is going on, right?
He caught the ball. Why are they taking the ball back? Why is the game stopped for 5 minutes? What are we doing? No, it's great to get that perspective. And like for me as a novice soccer fan, I mean, I played soccer growing up, but never really watched international soccer in these other leagues. And I'll just say, you go to LA, it's Laker town. You go down south, it's college football city, right? And you go anywhere else outside of this country, it's probably a soccer town. It's probably a soccer city. And that's probably the biggest thing that they care about. So putting yourself in that culture and realizing how important it is to these cities and these countries and these people that are fans of these teams, that really can get you into it. I went to the Barbados. It's on the TVs everywhere. And you go to England, you go to France, you go to Brazil, you go anywhere around the country. It's something that kind of unifies us with all these other nations. And it's pretty cool.
Exactly. You're being a part of a community, right? For example, if you meet someone else that's a Patriots fan, you're going to automatically feel that connection with them because you guys mess with the same sports team, you know?
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I think it's been really great. You know, living in LA, there's a bunch of different types of people. For example, there's, you know, a huge Latina population, a lot of Mexicans that really enjoy, you know, soccer and all that. So, you know, I just want to be, you know, if I go out, if I meet, you know, a bunch of Mexicans or, you know, a bunch of other people, I want to be able to connect with them and talk about something that that they're interested in as well. Because at the end of the day, you know, like we talked about earlier in this podcast, like we think sports are, you know, like are fun. And by the end of the day, do they really mean anything? But they do, because it brings so many people together. You know, whatever sport it is, if you're an Eagles fan, there's an Eagles
definitely,
community.
Definitely. community. And along the lines of what you're saying, you see someone in the street, I'm a Lakers fan, I see a Lakers fan in the street, you know, I get like the knucks or I get the head nod. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, all right, yeah, Lakers, man. Especially around here in New England where it's like, I only knew a handful of Lakers fans growing up. I went to University of Maine and I see another Lakers fan. If I'm wearing a Kobe jersey at the gym, I get like, those five cult Lakers fans, they're like, hey, man, I see you. Nice jersey, man.
Yeah.
And like you in the street, it's like, oh, hey, you're Arsenal? It's like, oh, yeah, what's up, man? It's like, and you don't think twice, like, who is this guy? Who is this girl? You know, where are they from? What do they look like? It's like, hey, he is my team. I am his team. We are together, man.
We are together.
That's one thing that I like about that.
Exactly. Sports is a great tool for bringing people together and, you know, with – you know, so many different types of people, so many different types of culture. It's hard to sometimes relate. And I think with sports, a lot of times, you can really relate with someone, don't matter what language you speak, don't matter what color of your skin you are, don't matter what sex you are. You know, at the end of the day, if you enjoy a sport and you're passionate about it, if you find somebody else that's going to be passionate about it, you know, all these other things, these real world situations that could happen and biases that could happen are basically thrown out the door because, you know, you making that connection of, you know, oh, that's your team? That's my
definitely
team, too. You
know? And it divides us in a certain way because it's like, oh, my God, you're a Celtics fan. Oh, you're a Lakers fan. But at the end of the day, you wipe that clean. That hate doesn't stick, right? So it doesn't really matter the same way. So while we wrap it up, I just wanted to throw out there that the Stanley Cup final starts tomorrow when we're recording, and it's the Dallas Stars and the Tampa Bay Lightning. We didn't get into that much today, but I'll definitely follow that. I'll be posting about it if you follow this page. And we'll keep you up to date on that. But that's an interesting combination of teams. The Stars haven't been to the final in 20 years, and they won in 1999. And Tampa Bay last year, it's good to see them come back because they tied the record for the most wins in the regular season last year, got bounced in the first round. So it's good to see them be the comeback kids, you know, in the way that the Raptors were. You know, the Raptors got bounced early and they came right back the next year. So good to see, and we'll keep in touch. But thanks, Z, for coming on. This has been awesome. We'll do it again real soon. And listeners, if you don't know, you got to check us out on social media. We're at ATG Sports Media. You can see the symbol right behind me. That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
And follow our parent page, All Things Good Co., at All Things Good Co., and that's over 100,000 followers now. It's just a company that brings you positive news, positive stories that for the most part you don't see anywhere else. People coming together, it's a great message and it's a great thing to get behind. So yeah, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you real soon and enjoy your weekend, everybody.
All right, thank you, everyone. It was a pleasure, Jeff.